I had now passed near a month in the enjoyment of all the pleasures of familiarity and society with my companions when, one day at about 5 in the afternoon, I stepped over to a fruiterer's shop in Covent Garden to pick some table fruit for myself and the young women. I met with the following adventure. Whilst I was chaffering for the fruit I wanted, I observed myself followed by a young gentleman. Easy was it to perceive that it was me he wanted to be at, and keeping his eyes fixed on me till he came to the same basket that I stood at, and cheapening, or rather giving the first price asked for the fruit, began his approaches. Now, most certainly, I was not at all out of figure to pass for a modest girl. I had neither the feathers nor fume of a tawdry town miss. A straw hat, a white gown, clean linen, and above all, a certain natural and easy air of modesty were all the signs that gave him no opening to conjecture my condition. He spoke to me, and this address from a stranger throwing a blush into my cheeks that still set him wider off the truth, I answered him with an awkwardness the more apt to impose, as there was really a mixture of the genuine in them. But when proceeding, having broken the ice, to join discourse, he went into other leading questions. I put so much innocence, simplicity, and even childishness into my answers, that on no better foundation, liking my person as he did, I will answer for it, he would have been sworn for my modesty. Amongst other queries he put to me was one whether I was married. I replied that I was too young to think of that this many a year. To that of my age, I answered, and sunk a year upon him, passing myself for not 17. After he had next got out of me, very dexterously, as he thought, what I had no sort of design to make reserve of, my own, my mistress's name, and place of abode, he loaded me with fruit, all the rarest and dearest he could pick out, and sent me home, pondering on what might be the consequence of this adventure. As soon then as I came to Mrs. Cole's, I related to her all that passed, on which she very judiciously concluded that if he did not come after me, there was no harm done, and that if he did, as her presage suggested to her he would, his character and his views should be well sifted, so as to know whether the game was worth the springs. The next morning, after an evening spent on his side, as we afterwards learnt, in perquisitions into Mrs. Cole's character in the neighbourhood, than which nothing could be more favourable to her design upon him, my gentleman came in his chariot to the shop, where Mrs. Cole alone had an inkling of his errand. Asking then for her, he easily made a beginning of acquaintance by bespeaking some millinery ware. Mrs. Cole took notice that the first impressions I made on him ran no risk of being destroyed by those of Louisa and Emily, who were then sitting at work by me. After vainly endeavouring to catch my eyes in re-encounter with his, and after giving Mrs. Cole direction when to bring the things home herself, and the time he should expect them, he went out, taking with him some goods that he paid for liberally, for the better grace of his introduction. Mrs. Cole, as soon as we were conveniently alone, insured me, in virtue of her long experience in these matters, that for this bout my charms had not missed fire, for that by his eagerness, his manner and looks, she was sure he had it. The only point now in doubt was his character and circumstances, which her knowledge of the town would soon gain her sufficient acquaintance with to take her measures upon. And effectively, in a few hours, her intelligence served her so well that she learned that this conquest of mine was no other than Mr. Norbert, a gentleman originally of great fortune, which, with a constitution naturally not the best, he had vastly impaired by his over-violent pursuit of the vices of the town, in the course of which, having worn out and staled all the more common modes of debauchery, he had fallen into a taste of maiden-hunting, in which chase he had ruined a number of girls, sparing no expense to compass his ends, and generally using them well till tired or cooled by enjoyment or springing a new face, he could with more ease disembarrass himself of the old ones and resign them to their fate, as his sphere of achievements of that sort lay only amongst such as he could proceed with by way of bargain and sale. Concluding from these premises, Mrs. Cole observed that a character of this sort was ever a lawful prize, that the sin would be not to make the best of our market of him, and that she thought such a girl as I only too good for him at any rate and on any terms. She went then, at the hour appointed, to his lodgings in one of our inns of court, and here she found him in ready waiting. After finishing her pretence of business, Mrs. Cole, acting admirably the good old prating gossip who lets everything escape her when her tongue is set in motion, cooked him up a story so plausible of me as finished him finely for her purpose. But when now fired and on the edge, he proceeded to drop hints of his design and views upon me, she led him through all the gradations of difficulty and obstacles necessary to enhance the value of the prize he aimed at. And in conclusion, he was so struck with the little beauty I was mistress of, and so eagerly bent on gaining his ends of me, that Mrs. Cole brought him at last to hug himself on the cheap bargain he considered the purchase of my imaginary jewel was to him, at no more than 300 guineas to myself, and 100 to the brokeress. When the articles of the treaty had been fully agreed on, the stipulated payments duly secured, and nothing now remained but the execution of the main point, which centred in the surrender of my person up to his free disposal and use. The night was fixed, with all possible respect to the eagerness of his impatience, and in the meantime Mrs. Cole had omitted no instructions, nor even neglected any preparation that might enable me to come off with honour in regard to the appearance of my virginity.